The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with John Couch, John's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio for Friday, December the 13th, 2019. Hey, my next show on Monday, I'll be a year older. So we could all be so fortunate, right? I look at opportunity. Another trip around the moon or the sun coming up here on Monday. We're live each weekday on the Buckmaster Show. It's 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. Our media partners like to say thank you to Dylan Smith. Dylan is the founder, editor, and publisher of the Tucson online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan just walked into our studios. Dylan, how are you?
Right on time, as usual.
Well, you had about 10 seconds to spare.
Dylan, watching the clock.
It's Christmas morning. Come on, dig into your bag that's in front of you and tell the listeners what your Christmas gift is for your service to the show.
Oh, this looks great, man.
What is it?
Teeling Irish whiskey.
Ooh.
Mm. We're going to crack this open right now.
No, not on the air, but after.
No, absolutely on the air. We'll get our guest a little bit tipsy and really get something out of him.
Dylan, Merry Christmas.
Starting late.
Thank you, sir.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you. Dan Scheer is with us, too. Dan, thanks for your support throughout the year. You're just such an integral part of what we do. Dan is the editor and the editor of the Green Valley News, Saharita Sun. Also, he's the editorial director for the 20, is it 24 or 25?
Oh, about 27 now.
27 WIC newspapers. And what was your gift, Dan, since it's Christmas?
From you, it wasn't whiskey, because you know I don't, it was chocolate.
From Rogers Chocolate up in Vancouver. You know I love.
Which we love.
You love that. Anyway, thanks, Dan, for your support. Also, we want to thank our friends Jim Ninsel and the group over at Tucson Inside, Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, Desert Times, all of the folks at the Tucson Local Media Group. With us in studio for our Friday Focus interview, Republican Pima County Supervisor District 4, Steve Christie. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. It's great to be on your show.
Thank you very much.
Glad you're better and back in the
goodness.
Saddle.
Something's going around, like laryngitis. Not good when you earn your living on the air. But anyway, we're back to...
Whiskey will fix that.
Yeah, 75 to 85%, almost. The whiskey will take it back to...
75 to 80%.
Yeah, that will take me back to the level that I need to be. Also, Dylan is... I want to mention that Dylan is very active nationally with the... He's the immediate past chair of the local independent online publishers known as Lion Press. Just had a big meeting in Chicago, right, Dylan?
Indeed. Well, that wasn't a Lion Publishers meeting, actually. That was a meeting that involved a whole bunch of Lion Publishers, about 20 of us from around the country, out of about 170 news leaders in local news that it was put on by Google. And actually, one of Dan Shearer's WIC Communications folks was there as well.
Really?
What is Sean's title?
Boy, he does everything. But he recently landed us a Google News Initiative grant.
So. Sean Fitzpatrick, and there were a whole bunch of, about, I think, four folks from the Daily Star there, too. So it was a pretty impressive Tucson contingent at this national meeting of local news leaders.
You were back in my hometown, and I'm sure there was a little bit of Irish whiskey there, too.
A little bit, and a whole lot of really great steaks.
Yeah, there you go. Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, just great.
Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry says he cannot and will not recommend future acceptance of the Stone Garden grant. Your reaction?
Well, I think obviously he kind of jumped the gun, I think, initially with the asylum seekers shelter and the amount of money that he committed to it, as well as the facilities that he committed to it. I think he based a lot of that on a reliance that he would be getting the Stone Garden grants. And the original grant, of course, was amended, I think, somewhat magically to expand away from law enforcement efforts with the money towards humanitarian aid. And I thought, and I think at this time, as I thought then, that that was not the original intent of the grant or what the grant was originally intended to deal with. But nonetheless, in order to get it passed as a whole, it got through. And I think Mr. Huckleberry was relying on that money, and it is not coming. And in the meantime, I think we've processed the latest numbers I've seen since August of this year, some 14,000 asylum seekers. And the costs associated that I've heard to date that the county and the taxpayers have paid is somewhere in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. And the total reimbursement that the county has received for those efforts are roughly just under 140. So there is an ongoing ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching happening with the taxpayers' money, and nothing is forthcoming with the federal government on the original Stone Garden grant. And then now with the issue of the overtime, which has been around as long as the Stone Garden grant has, I think perhaps Mr. Huckleberry is saying, well, since I haven't been able to get the money I originally relied on, I'm looking at other things too, and consequently the whole Stone Garden grant process really is not worth the expenses involved, and consequently it's not a good thing, and I won't recommend it.
Here's Dan Scheer.
County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry did tell us earlier this week that he doesn't think that that grant is happening. I don't know that we've got an official word on it yet, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So what do we do? Do we continue to fund the asylum seekers?
I think at this point that's what the county administrator's plan is. The board majority seems to be supportive of that, and I can only hope that Mr. Huckleberry's wrong on the acceptance of the Stone Garden grant and that there is still hope. I'm hoping that Sheriff Napier, who has maintained excellent relationships with the folks in Washington who administrate these grants, is able to continue that relationship and perhaps influence in a positive way the Pima County might be able to accept a lot more, if not the entire grant, but it doesn't look good at this point, and the asylum seeker shelter is still in operation. The county is still providing the services of serving meals and providing food service to the asylum seekers, and I don't see that there's any way out of this at this particular time because of what we've gotten ourselves into by anticipating monies that aren't going to be coming.
Do you think that the federal government is making a point with Pima County that, we expect you to use this purely for law enforcement activities and not all of this other stuff that you want to use it for, and they're making an example of us?
I think that definitely has a contingent factor in it, because the original Stone Garden grant was for collaboration of law enforcement entities to work together, and apparently there is some wiggle room in there that some of it could be used for humanitarian aid, but not only for the point that you just made, that the federal government's trying to make a point of trying to massage these grants, but also the fact that we've been dealing with accepting them and rejecting them for well over a year now, back and forth, to the point where I think the federal government is probably saying, why are we expending so much money, effort, and attention to Pima County on these grants when they've been rejecting them all along? And let's put our services and attention elsewhere, because grants are being delivered elsewhere in other communities. So somewhere that money is being given, but it's not being given to Pima County.
And he put out a memo earlier this week about pensions spiking and how every dollar spent on Stone Garden was going to cost us $6 down the line in form of larger pensions. Number one, why did it take 12 years to figure that out? That's how long we've been accepting the Operation Stone Garden grant. And are there other grants that are also spiking pensions that we're going to say no to?
I'm not aware of any other grants that are doing the same type of thing, but certainly this is the system that's been in place for 12 years, and all of a sudden it's bubbling to the surface as a kind of a planting an Iwo Jima flag that this is a bad grant in total. If there is an issue or a systemic problem with how compensation is conveyed for retirement, in the sheriff's department or any other department, then that should be analyzed and looked at. But certainly the sheriff's department is not the only department that has this type of process. I know they do it in the military. I think it's based on so many years. You qualify for a certain percentage of your income, and it accelerates as you put in those years. So that's not an unusual practice. And to cut out the grant completely just because of this, I think is dangerous, because I feel it is much better to have the resources on the border collaborating with other law enforcement entities than not to have them there at all. So there is a value in the overtime. There is a value of having experienced deputies who are highly trained, again, highly experienced on the front line. But I know that this is a systemic problem as far as spiking pensions, and that's, I think, a whole separate issue. But it's better to have that problem and the presence of law enforcement and deputies in the sheriff's department on the border communities than not to have them there at all.
Dylan, wasn't it your understanding, didn't you hear that, like, Catholic Charities was supposed to be helping out for most of the cost with the migrants being housed here in town?
Not most of the cost, no.
Oh.
A portion, and they have, you know, especially with their extensive volunteer efforts, most of the, you know, work that goes into running that place is done by their paid staff and an absolute army of volunteers. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to ask Supervisor Christie, is there any reasonable alternative to keeping that shelter open, paid for, maybe not entirely by the county, maybe the city should pitch in a little bit more too, but if we were just to close the doors, those people would still be here in this community. The federal government would still be just dropping them off on the streets to absolutely fend for themselves when they have no connections here, no idea where to go, what to do.
Yeah, it is a problem, but I think it's a problem that should not be saddled by the taxpayers. And we do have these social service agencies that do receive revenue in millions and millions of dollars annually for alleged social service work. And I would think that something as large as the Catholic Church and the diocese would be able to find facilities within its own boundaries and within its own jurisdictions that could accommodate the asylum seekers, if that's the mission that they want to continue, that they could provide easily without having the county provide all the infrastructure services for this at the taxpayer expense. This is a humanitarian social service focus that should remain in the social service agencies. There's a number of faith-based organizations that really are vying for all the revenue that's supposed to be coming from the federal government for this type of service. I haven't seen battles over this kind of thing since, I guess, the Reformation and the Church of England leaving the Church of Rome or whatever. But that is a distinct issue, that there are these agencies that are set up and designed for this kind of work. Let them do it. Let them get the grants from the government. Leave it away from the taxpayer.
All right.
The sheriff, County Sheriff Napier, told me that he was absolutely supportive of the shelter, that he sees it as a law enforcement issue, because otherwise we would have thousands of people just with homeless, with nowhere to go, no resources whatsoever, and you know, a number of them would it's quite readily apparent would be basically forced to commit crimes just to find food and shelter. And so he said, you know, he announced back before you guys took this vote that he would happily give up all of his overtime from Stone Garden to make sure that this happened.
Well, I would disagree respectfully with the sheriff on that. I think that that there could be alternatives had they been given adequate collaboration among the social service agencies. And you know, Lord knows there's, I don't know how many hundreds of social service agencies in Pima County whose mission is it to do these types of work. I think if they were brought in from the beginning rather than we saw a number of folks jump into it, the city of Tucson, then Pima County, if we just left it to the people who know how to handle this best, I'm sure they could have figured out a way to handle the influx, to provide the shelter, and to disseminate the services that they need to.
All right, let's hit the pause button, Dylan. And what do you want to talk about, Dill? Monas, are you there? Dylan?
Oh.
I think he opened the pop.
I was waiting. I used to hit the, of course.
Hit the pause button. Let's talk about Mona's northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise.
I was staring fondly at this bottle of whiskey, but you know what? I think that would go pretty well with the Danish Kringle as
quick,
well.
Home of the Danish Kringle. Supervisor Christie, a quick quiz for you. Would you prefer on Christmas morning the traditional custard, cherry, strawberry, blueberry, lemon, apricot, or pecan?
I am a blueberry fan.
Okay. Dan, what would you go with?
I'm from Green Valley. I have to take the pecan.
Okay. And Dylan? Traditional custard for you? Or
everything else?
Yeah, I'll just take one of each. Why not?
And for the Christmas Day dinner, here are your pie selections from Mona's Danish Bakery. Supervisor Christie, pumpkin, apple, blueberry, cherry, or pecan?
Well, now that
you're going to do the blueberry.
Yeah, Dan's made me feel guilty because the pecan groves are in my district.
Here's where the politician kicks in.
I definitely need the pecan.
And he can have it because I've had their apple pie and it's absolutely incredible. So,
Dylan, what about you, buddy?
Apple.
Okay.
All the way.
Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery. They're open right now for lunch. Of course, they do a hot breakfast. They are taking your orders for the pies, for the Danish Kringles, for your dinner rolls. It's all available. And what about those cookies? My goodness, they've got all the Christmas cookies nicely packaged. Take them to your holiday gathering next week. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Also a link at BuckmasterShow.com. More with Supervisor Steve Christie, Dylan Smith, and Dan Shear, and me, Bill Buckmaster, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Take 5 minutes to give us your input on regional transportation matters. The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee prepared draft guiding principles to consider as they prepare to develop the next RTA plan. The survey is available between mid-November and mid-December. To take the survey or to sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday Focus Interview. Pima County Supervisor, Republican District 4. Steve Christie is our Friday Focus Interview. Dan Scheer here from the Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun. Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. And Dan Scheer, you are up to the plate in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio.
Currently, Mexicans with a border crossing card can come 75 miles inside Arizona, and that's great for Pima County because they can hit Tucson and do some shopping. But Senator Martha McSally, Representative Greg Stanton from the Phoenix area have introduced bills in Congress that would allow visitors from Mexico to travel throughout Arizona. Now, Governor Ducey is calling this a win-win for Arizona, but it doesn't sound like a win for Pima County.
Well, I think it's very apparent what the reasoning behind and the motivation behind these actions by Stanton and McSally are. Greg happened to have been mayor of
Phoenix.
Yep. Senator McSally needs Maricopa County votes.
After the recent polling, we're seeing that Kelly has a pretty good lead up in Maricopa County.
Yeah, and certainly that's where it is vote rich, and she's her name recognition, I think, is suffering up there. And so consequently, I think the obvious intent of this is apparent. It again, I think, exemplifies how Pima County and Southern Arizona are the redheaded stepchildren of the legislature and the powers in Phoenix. We've seen this time and time again, and I think it's unnecessary and unjust type of action, and I really question, is it going to have that powerful of an impact economically that far north from the border?
Will Pima County have a formal response to this? And it's called the Southwest Tourism Expansion Act.
I can't speak on behalf of my colleagues or the county administrator, but it's certainly something that our office is going to be looking at and having some sort of response to at some point.
Let's go to the live line. Matt has called us, 790-2040. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday with the 13th.
Yep. Yep.
Real quickly, could you guys, does anybody know where we are in sort of a general picture with the I-11 corridor? Nobody's talked about it since the last time the state asked for their final inputs from Pima County. And the second part of the question is, does anybody imagine that the water situation, now that the drought contingency plan is going to take effect next year, will that play anything into the idea of these trans highway corridors? I'm just curious if we're in a new dynamic.
Well, Matthew, we have we've been following that I-11 corridor thing because it had some resonated quite a bit in our area, but the council has backed off on any support of it because they realized it would go through neighborhoods and people were upset, but they'd had signed a letter 3 years ago saying they supported it. Now they don't. I think it's in a tier one study. I will tell you this, there's an I-11 website out there that's very, very good, and it updates with everything and has all the studies and everything. It's the best place to get the updates.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too. That's still in the community outreach and gathering of input from the community. And, you know, it's still, before they even make any determination, that point is still quite far. As far as the water, I'm sure that's always a factor in just about everything we do in the state of Arizona and in Southern Arizona. I don't know if that's been the driving force as far as any determinations of directions that I-11 is going to be going in.
And just to piggyback on what Steve was saying, is we have to remember that I-11 may not ever happen, and if it does, it could be years and years and years in the future.
The thing that concerns me about I-11, and certainly, you know, there is a great deal of animosity toward it. I was on the State Transportation Board when that whole issue came up, and it was really designed because the Phoenix powers that we just talked about wanted only a new interstate between Phoenix and Las Vegas. I guess they wanted to go gamble quicker from Phoenix. And they were cutting out southern Arizona completely. And I've always wanted to stand up or at least be heard about southern Arizona. And if they were going to have that kind of a corridor, and based on our trade, supposed wonderful relations with Mexico, it's and the multi-million-dollar renovations of the Mariposa Port of Entry, it just seemed to me that we should be included in the conversation. Now, how that final determination is going to be made as far as its coursing is one thing. Will it ever be completed is another, but it's important that we keep a seat at the table in the discussion of infrastructure and transportation in southern Arizona. And if we, you know, put another block in front of that whole issue, we will be ignored in any future discussions about transportation items of any substance in southern Arizona. So I hope we're going to keep this discussion open of I-11 in some form or another, in some place or another, but it's important that that southern Arizona's benefits as well as presence are kept on this matter. Otherwise, it's going to be a typical Phoenix against Tucson, Maricopa against Pima County issue, and we'll be left far behind.
How about the road repair issue? That I-11 is down the road, but you and your colleagues voted to spend $526 million for road repairs over the next 10 years. Is this going to make a difference, Steve Christie?
It certainly will, dependent, of course, on how fast we're able to program those projects. That's, I think, one of the biggest challenges we face is there's a workforce lack. There are companies, construction companies, that just can't keep up with the demand. If we had that $530-some million sitting on this counter in front of us, we can only dole out so much per year for programming because of the capacity that is lacking in the construction industry. So the way that it's being programmed, I think, is very sound. And certainly all studies that we've been looking at for the last couple of years on this discussion indicate that that amount of money over that period of time will make a significant difference as long as we can get it programmed efficiently and effectively.
Dylan, would you like to add anything before I say goodbye to the supervisor?
Yeah, real quick. On the transportation idea, I want to get pretty quickly your thoughts about the future of the RTA. That's really starting to become a much more substantial discussion. Our listeners should know that there's a survey that the RTA is having right now, and I think it closes on Sunday. So if you want to have your input, go check that out at their website, the Regional Transportation Authority. They're trying to get some public input on it. In fact, our columnist Blake Morlock just published a column sort of criticizing the structure of the survey because it seems to only be asking for happy backpatting answers about, they're asking stuff like, should we have a responsible plan? Should we spend the money right? You know, that's not really anything that's both in his assessment and mine, well designed to like get people's priorities. What do you think those priorities, well, first, should we have a new RTA? Should we extend it? Should we revamp it some, especially around maintenance rather than just new roads?
Well, you're asking someone who has a bit of prejudice in the matter because I was on the original Citizens Advisory mm-hmm. Committee back in 2005, 2006.
You helped get it established.
It helped get it established. I also served as chair of the RTA and my role on the State Transportation Board. So, yes, I think the results of the RTA since 2006 are very obvious. The success is very obvious. The beneficial impact that the RTA has provided, not only job-wise and economy-wise, but transportation and quality of life-wise, everything from the Houghton Road Corridor, the Tancredi Valley Corridor, to the bridge over Kolb, to the Twin Peaks interchange, and on and on and on. Practically every major intersection in the county has been improved and enhanced because of the RTA. So yes, I would be in favor of extending the RTA, renewing it. There are, I think, a lot of issues that still face people who really weren't around that long ago about the RTA. And fortunately, we've got another Citizens Advisory Committee of 35 members that I think will be looking really closely at the points you just made about the survey, but also determining things such as should maintenance be included in the new RTA reauthorization? Should it be for strictly for new building of roads, new construction projects?
What's your take on that? Should we include maintenance?
I definitely believe there should be a factor involved in that includes maintenance. Some people say, well, maybe that maintenance factor that should be included should only be for maintenance for RTA projects. Well, at one point, I wanted to expand the RTA mission to include all roads in Pima County. So those are issues that have to be delicately and very thoughtfully looked at. And fortunately, we have a little bit of time to do it. But I am in favor of reauthorizing it and looking very closely at maybe refocusing its mission.
All right, we're quickly running out of time. Facebook question, want to get this one in. Why does the pay-as-you-go only apply to the unincorporated areas, Supervisor Christie?
The county is the one that's driving this behind it, and it's the pay-as-you-go is designed for, obviously, unincorporated Pima County, and that is the process because the other jurisdictions have their own road plans and have their own taxes. Certainly there is going to be a lot of interchanging between the municipalities, but everyone's going to benefit from the repairing of unincorporated Pima County roads because everybody uses them to commute throughout the county. So the pay-as-you-go was designed for the unincorporated county areas from the beginning, and they're the ones that have the most need.
But as our friend on Facebook points out, 463 kind of covered everything, right? And that failed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That obviously is indicative of the fact that the taxpayers don't want to be in a bonding taxing right. situation for these things. So pay-as-you-go takes money out of the county's general fund,
right.
and then consequently the county's resources are going to be to the unincorporated areas.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve Christie. Hope you have a great Christmas and a Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Coming up next, Luigi Del Puerto, who oversees pretty much the Arizona Capital Times. He's already with us on the live line. We'll go to him after we take the break. Dan Scheer sticks around, as does Dylan Smith. Be right back on Buckmaster.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-8888. 6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dylan Smith is with me in studio from TucsonSentinel.com. Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News. On the live line from Phoenix, Luigi Del Puerto. Luigi is associate publisher and editor of the Phoenix-based Arizona Capital Times. Luigi, how are you?
Good, Bill. How are you? Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday. What's your favorite Christmas song? I posted something on Facebook saying it's totally unhip, but The Carpenter's Christmas is my favorite. I know. Listen, these guys giving me a hard time.
No, I love it.
Luigi, do you like
that's
it?
That's just a horrible choice, Bill.
Oh, come on, man.
You are wrong. You are wrong.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that song. It's for me, it's, you know, it's Jingle Bells.
Okay. All
right. Can't go wrong with Jingle Bells.
There you go. Okay, yep, Luigi, yep. We're tight on time, so I'm going to make a quick question. Number one issue facing the 2020 legislative session, which gavels into session, believe it or not, in less than a month.
Yes. So the budget is going to be the number one issue in this upcoming session, and more specifically, the K-12 budget. There are a couple of things that I think the governor would want to put emphasis on, like, for example, the Teachers Academy and how, you know, we funded that. The state actually funded it for the first time, vis-a-vis just having the university sort of find the funding from their own budgets, which was the case the last couple of years. So I think the governor is going to be anxious to see how we're doing with recruiting teachers and getting more students to actually learn to be a teacher. And there's going to be a lot of emphasis on putting more money for schools. You know, in the last couple of years, this governor, for example, has put in more money for, what we would refer to as performance-based funding, which means really that if you're a good school, and there are matrices measuring what good means, then you get more funding. I think, the governor has been doing that. I think that's going to continue. But also there's the question, what about these low-income schools, for example? And what are we doing on that front? And there are myriad issues in the K-12 budget that I think we'll see come up. Funding for school counselors, funding for SROs. I think there's going to be a lot of emphasis on just the K-12 budget. Now, I say that because obviously it's the biggest component of the budget every single year, but the economy is doing really well. We passed a budget that assumed, 7.8% growth, but actually general fund revenue grew by 10.2% in this year, in 2019, which is going to give us a little bit extra money. And I think that we're going to have about $170 million in sort of available ongoing funds. That means projects that we can fund year in, year out. And there's, I think, just a little less than $500 million in sort of one-time funding that then we can use. I've heard some people or some assumptions put available funds as high as $1 billion. That remains to be seen, but the economy is strong.
Okay.
And so I think there's a lot of money that's available to spend. When that happens, there's a lot of fight.
Here's Dan Scheer, the Green Valley News.
Hey, Luigi, last summer, Attorney General Mark Brnovich suggested that the legislature tackle the issue of recreational marijuana. And his thought is that if you put it before the voters and it's okayed, it's going to be really tough to unwind if something goes wrong. But if the legislature okays it, then it'll be a little easier to make changes. Do you think this is something that's going to come up?
So, you know, if they're smart, and I think a lot of them are smart, they'll do it the way that Attorney General is suggesting, which is do something about it. That way you can control it. And if you see that it's not working, you can change it. You can amend it. You can change it. You have some control over the system that's being created, and it's going to be a pretty big change. I don't really know if there's a political will to do it in the state legislature. You need a champion or several champions to do something as big as allowing recreational marijuana. That champion has to be a Republican. Otherwise, the chances of a Democrat championing this cause and getting it passed is, it's just not realistic, to be candid about it. So you need one or maybe more Republicans just carrying that ball. And I just cannot see a Republican at this point having the political will, which means putting his or her neck on the line, and carrying that big of a burden.
Here's Dylan Smith.
And there is a group that's, again, trying to get that on the ballot in a slightly different form than before. And the issue there, as far as the legislature and, the state government goes, that if the voters pass an initiative, the legislature can't go in and change it. The only way to change it is another vote by the people at an election. So if there's some, not even rolling it back, as Dan suggested, but if there's some little tweak that needs to be made in the system, it would not be possible. Well, and we've seen other states that have passed, whether various medical or recreational marijuana systems, that they've gone in and made slight, little tweaks here and there if they were able to, if it was passed by the ledge, and, sort of realize that, maybe we should kind of do it this way a little bit differently.
So you're right. The legislature can amend a voter approved measure, but the threshold is so high.
Yeah.
It's 3/4 vote in each chamber that it's practically impossible to do it. So if it's passed by the ballot, you can almost always assure that if it's a controversial amendment, that it's not going to go anywhere. Now, if it's something that everybody agrees on, you'll get, you'll get unanimous vote or one or two no votes, then no problem. You can amend what's approved on the ballot.
Luigi, this is Dan again. Frank Milstead, the head of the DPS, was stopped for speeding, let off the hook by a deputy. We all saw the body cam video. The governor's response was pretty much, well, who hasn't been caught for speeding? Which kind of overlooked the fact that he was using his position to get off the hook. Has there been much response to how the governor responded to this?
Well, I hate to say the word usual response, but you are hearing the sort of the typical response that you see whenever a public official, especially in this case, the head of DPS, getting caught speeding and not knowing that it's criminal speeding. So you get sort of the typical response, which is to, demand a more concrete or maybe I should put it as a more assertive response from the governor. And once you don't see that, then, people complain about it. I think that, for example, I shouldn't speculate. This is what we know. I don't think Frank Milstead is going anywhere. I think that, people will look at this and say, all right, he's done a big mistake. The people have their chance to react, and they've criticized him. They've criticized the governor, and I think people are just going to move on.
All right. Dylan, do you have anything? Or Dan, quickly.
You know, it's a little frustrating because the governor is also the one who said that he would be supportive of closing the border for a short time after Donald Trump put him in a headlock.
That's
and
right.
He kind of didn't have to answer for that either. We had interviewed Karen Fann of the state legislature on Bill's show, and she said, nah, not a big deal. And it's so frustrating that he now on this one also is kind of being given a pass, the governor is, when we're not necessarily saying to fire Milstead, but we're saying, wait a minute, aren't you understanding the implications that you now have two sets of rules?
Well, you know, there are sort of, I think there are gradations to an error, in this case, a glaring error by a public safety official. So, for example, he got caught with a DUI. I think you would have seen like a much more assertive response from the governor's office. And I think if it's a DUI, for example, then it's going to be a bigger problem for Frank Milstead. There's going to be calls for his resignation, no doubt about it. In this case, it's, you know, a criminal speeding. Nobody got hurt. And I think that weighed into the governor's ultimate decision to just say, you know what, I'm just going to let it go.
All right, Luigi Del Puerto. Thank you, Luigi. I hope you have a great Christmas and holiday, and we'll be talking to you in the new year.
Have a good one.
Thank you very much, Luigi.
See you.
Okay, Dylan and Dan, I've only got a couple of minutes left. Quick comment, Dylan and or Dan, retired astronaut Mark Kelly, the Democrat leading Senator McSally by, it's only a narrow 3-point margin in Arizona, but in Maricopa County, Kelly's got a pretty good lead.
That's kind of surprising to see at this point. You know, there are still people who are undecided, and we always have to account for the margin of error.
And look how
and people,
early
you know,
it is.
Changing
yeah.
their minds.
Yeah.
But, you know, to see the number of people who say they've made up their mind already and yeah. are leaning in the, you know, in the direction of the Democrat, Mark Kelly, is, you know, I wouldn't, you know, totally discount it. I'm, you know, I'll quite often reject very early polls out of
it
hand just because they're noise.
Early.
But
yep.
This seems, you know, it's not like I'm going to call this race right now.
Go ahead, Dan.
But.
And I would agree. I think we need to get through the whole impeachment proceedings and see what direction that goes, and then we'll see how people are sizing up Martha McSally, but way, way, way too early to be looking at the polls and putting too much faith in them.
Dylan, is your offer still going at TucsonSentinel.com? I know I found the process very easy donating online.
Thank you, sir.
And I did make that donation this week because I believe in you and the work that you do. Is it generally, did I find, was it an anomaly or was this is an easy process for everybody?
Well, if Bill Buckmaster can figure it
yeah,
out, you
can
too.
I mean, if
too.
I can figure it out online, anybody could, right?
And it's a double deal, right? Yes, through the end of the year, basically through the stroke of midnight yeah. on December 31st, although we'd be happy if you did it sooner than that, your donation to TucsonSentinel.com's nonprofit newsroom will be doubled, matched dollar for dollar, up to $1,000 for each individual donor by a program called Newsmatch, which is supporting nonprofit newsrooms like us all over the country. And
okay.
it's really, you know, vital for us to get this kind of community support. We really, really rely on the donations. And thank you again.
You're welcome. WIC Communications, a good year, Dan Scheer.
Really good year for us here in Green Valley, and we will take your checks, too. No one's matching them, though.
Oh, boy. All righty. Dan and Dylan, thank you both so much for helping out, as you do here on the Buckmaster Show. And
absolutely.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, thank you for what you do.
Thank you, and hope you have a great holiday season. All right, Matt Russell is coming up next. Weekend Watch Buckmaster in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
A Citizens Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is preparing to develop the next RTA plan. That's why members want your input on a survey of draft guiding principles they prepared. The principles will help guide them as they develop the next 20-year plan, which would be funded by a voter-required extension of the RTA's half-cent excise or sales tax. To take the survey or sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Anybody for a road trip? 3-hour drive from Tucson. It's a great area of the Southwest. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of great things to do and so many fun places to stay and some great dining establishments as well in historic Silver City. Let's welcome now Matt Russell, Inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist and award-winning Tucson publicist. Hello, Matt.
Well, hey there, Bill. But just before we get started, I have to ask, I certainly hope Dylan Smith saved me just a sip of that Peeling's Irish whiskey that he nearly cracked open on the console there.
Oh,
the studio.
I think that bottle is already open somewhere right now. Is anything going on that Miracle on Congress Street? Are they doing that this year?
They absolutely are, and you know it's the holiday season when Miracle on Congress pops up at the old Martin Drug Company at 300 East Congress. This is a winter wonderland in every way. The festivities for the whole family, there's going to be sweet treats for everyone, including cocktails for the over 21 crowd that kind of celebrate the flavors of the season. Even Santa will make a grand appearance for free photos with the kids. It's today from 4 to midnight. Saturday from 11 a.m. to midnight, and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. for Miracle on Congress.
Iron Chef Bulletin.
Boop, 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 boop. yes, it didn't take Tucson's reigning Iron Chef Wendy Gauthier long after her culinary coronation to open up a restaurant of her very own. Bill, it's called Chef Chic, and it opened just this week at 1104 South Wilmot. This is a breakfast and lunch concept that features a lot of the favorite dishes from her catering menu that she's renowned for, plus some new dishes, some great new burgers and flatbreads, soups and salads and more, all prepared by the hardworking hands of Tucson's Iron Chef. Swing by this weekend to say hi to Wendy. She's open from 6:30 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Elvira's has been a standard in Southern Arizona.
It sure has. And check this out. You know, I'm often asked where to get great fried chicken in town. And there are plenty of delicious options. But this holiday season marks a series of Sunday dinners, and you said it, at Elvira's downtown, that are anchored by what I'm hearing is outrageously good fried chicken. So, of course, it gets my pick for weekend watch. The events are called Pollo Frito Sundays, and they serve up batter-fried chicken with a chipotle aioli, a spicy papas dorados, sweet Mexican street corn, happy hour pricing on beverages, and bottles of wine for only $20. It runs from 4 to 8 p.m. every Sunday through the season, so put Pollo Frito on your calendar this Sunday night at Elvira's downtown and get your fried chicken game on.
Count me in, Matt Russell. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, Bill.
All right, the Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant. Everybody here at Bustos Media Tucson, including my fine engineer, producer, John Couch. Another great job. Thank you, John. All of us wish you a safe and pleasant weekend. Have a good one.